Today's talk is on the Buddha. What else would I talk about? Well, mostly I talk about what he taught. Today I'm going to talk about who he was. And hopefully put it into a little bit of context, his life. Even the idea that's raised often. Can we even believe that there was a human being who we could identify as Siddhartha Gautama, who would become awakened, become a Buddha? And I believe you can. I think when you read enough of the scholarly books, Richard Gombrich and Carl Olson, who happens to be a cousin of mine, and a few others, really established, beyond a reasonable doubt, that there was a human being. And that the human being that's depicted in the Pali Canon is not a compilation of a few different characters, which is something that you could expect, or at least you'd look at in something that's 2,600 years old. But it's the consistency of the presentation throughout the Pali Canon that's remarkable. And points to a single human being, and it's the consistency of the message in the Pali Canon that gave those teachings a lot of credence for me. There are so many different suttas still preserved in that canon, but when you understand the context, they're easily understood in the context of Four Noble Truths and Dependent Origination. So, about 2,600 years ago, a royal family, some would say that he was Siddhartha Gautama's father was more of a governor than a king, but it really doesn't matter. He was in that part of northern India, he was in a position of power and wealth. So in that situation, Siddhartha was born. And his father, there's many legends and myths and stories about the Buddha's birth, and almost like the three wise men visiting Christ, and a couple of folks came and made some prophecies about this auspicious young boy who was just born, and so those are interesting things that liven up the story, but I don't believe they don't relate at all to whether or not a human being actually awakened. So. Even though there's a prediction that he might. So, young Siddhartha was given everything that a prince would be given to keep him happy and keep him on the farm, as you will, to make sure that he would take over his father's throne, which is what King Suddhodana was mostly concerned about. So, the Buddha, his early life was very secluded. But at the age of 29, he finally left the palace grounds, and for the first time in his young life, he saw sickness, aging, and death. He saw the competitiveness and the acquisitiveness of the people in the marketplace, in the town, and he could not understand any of it. And it so surprised him and shocked him that, like many young men in his time, he decided to leave his father's palace and wander around the countryside looking for teachers and looking for answers. So he did. Under the cover of darkness, he snuck out, leaving his wife and his newborn, Rahula, who both later on would become part of the Buddha Sangha. So the young Siddhartha wandered around northern India for 6 years. In his entire lifetime, he never left a 400 square mile area, which, when you think about that, I think that's remarkable, that the impact that this human being had and still has to this day. Okay, come on. Good boy. He studied with some of the most advanced teachers of his time, Alara Kalama, Unudeka Ramaputta, or two of them, who taught similar doctrines based on the Vedas, the precursor to modern Hinduism. And the Buddha mastered both of those teachings and the meditation techniques associated with them very, very quickly. And so much so that both of those teachers asked the Buddha to come and be their senior teacher. And the Buddha rejected both of those teachers as saying that neither one of those teachings lead to the goal that he was seeking an understanding of. He said that both of those teachings, lead to a reappearance in other realms. And what he's talking about is a reappearance in realms rooted in the same ignorance that gave rise to the three marks of existence and ongoing disappointing experiences. So the Buddha continued, or Siddhartha continued to wander around northern India. And anybody see? Yeah, somebody's listening. Welcome. I see there's at least one person there. And he eventually met up with five other fellows who were ascetics. They practiced severe asceticism with the idea that if you can deny the body to an extreme level, somehow you'll free the mind from the body. And it's interesting when you really look at what the Buddha taught, he taught exactly the opposite. He taught how to unite the mind and the body. Most people don't see that, but that's precisely what he was teaching. That's the essence of mindfulness, to be fully present where we are in our bodies. That's another talk. So the Buddha started practicing along with his friends these very severe ascetic practices, so much so that the Buddha himself tells of how thin he got, hardly eating, and that he could touch his spine through his belly. And eventually the Buddha, Siddhartha, was walking down the road one day and was so sick from improper nourishment that he passed out on the side of the road. There's my book. And it said that he rolled down an embankment into a river, and a young girl, named Sujata, pulled him out of the water, saved his life, and nursed him back to health. And eventually the Buddha, out of this frustration now of all the effort that he's put in, and nothing leading to his goal, he was born into this very wealthy situation where he could satisfy every one of his desires, and he practiced the other extreme of complete sensory denial. And none of those worked. And so he decided at that point that he was simply going to sit in meditation until he understood. And he remembered a meditation technique that he had used when he was just a little boy, when he was around 5 years old. He remembered he was having a particularly difficult day and frustrated with things. And he decided to sit in his backyard under this tree and just think about his breath, just be mindful of his breath and see if that helped calm his mind. And it did. And he remembered that 31 years later. And that's exactly what he did. And he sat in meditation, being mindful of his breath as things arise. He acknowledged that he was distracted by impermanent feelings and thoughts and situations that were coming up in his mind, and he came back to the sensation of his breathing. And he did this with the strong intention, the second factor of the Eightfold Path, to recognize and abandon all craving and clinging and the myths that go along with this story. I won't tell the story at all. Relate to those qualities of mind that young Siddhartha was generating at the time. And so eventually, with this strong intention and what he had developed over the past years, and some may say even lifetimes, eventually young Siddhartha awakened. And upon his awakening, he now considered if there was a way to teach what he knew. What he now understood, he described in Dependent Origination as the problem of suffering is rooted in ignorance, a very specific ignorance, ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And what the Buddha considered is that how do you penetrate a mind that is rooted in ignorance? Because he understood that a mind rooted in ignorance creates very subtle and powerful strategies to continue to ignore its own ignorance, including so-called spiritual practice, which is really what's happened even with most of modern Buddhism. And the Buddha considered that as just continued eye-making, which means engaging in activities that allow us to ignore the problem of misunderstanding of self so that we can continue to establish that misunderstanding, that ignorance of self in the world. And the Buddha had now come to an understanding of that. But he was unsure of the possibility of actually teaching this to human beings, how to pierce that veil of ignorance. So this is when he created, I don't know if that's the right word, but I can't think of a better word, because it's not, it didn't come out of whole cloth. It's not like it was a miracle. It's not like the Ten Commandments. He codified, or codified, I don't know if what's the right word, programmers would know, how to do it. And that was the Eightfold Path, a framework for recognizing and abandoning our own ignorance. So young Siddhartha would live for 45 years post his awakening. It is said that he gave over 84,000 different discourses. That number just means a whole heck of a lot. But I can tell you that I've read a lot of the Pali Canon, especially the Sutta Pitakas, the second book of the Pali Canon. And what is most remarkable to me is the consistency in Siddhartha's methods, I should say the Buddha now, and how everything that he taught and the other teachers that are presented in the Sutta Pitaka is easily understood within the context of dependent origination and Four Noble Truths, and easily misunderstood when taken out of that context, which is exactly what has happened. What I'll finally say about this, the important thing to remember about the Buddha and Siddhartha Gautama and this whole story, I guess it's two things. Do we know that it's true, and do we know that what he taught is true? There's nothing we can say is absolute. There's no such thing. This is what we understand through the Dhamma. Everything is impermanent. Everything is a constant state of becoming. So there's no absolutes that we can make. Even the truth of that. However, we can look at the effectiveness of this. This brilliant man, Siddhartha Gautama, now an awakened Buddha, said, just simply come and see for yourself, ahepasiko. Once you experience this for yourself, you will continue with it, and it will have no value for you at all unless you experience it for yourself. And so, you know, there's kind of that double-edged sword. Most people won't get off their cushions and actually change anything. They much prefer a practice that allows them to maintain the self-identities that got them in such a confused state and to motivate towards so-called spiritual practice, rather than recognize, as the Buddha did, that his confusion was rooted in ignorance, and anything that continued that ignorance could only continue the confusion and the suffering that followed from that. So that's it. That's today's talk. Thank you all for joining or watching later on. If you find benefit from this talk or my talks in general, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.